can't hear you.
Yeah, now that you've jinxed us. All right, how about we talk some games?
If we have to.
Yeah, we might want to.
I'm excited to talk about some solo print and play games.
Yeah, well, we could do that. So,
I'm dying to jump in on that.
Yeah, so welcome everybody to another episode of Mentioned in Dispatches with some of our forum regulars here. We've got Chris, who's dying to talk about solo print and play games. Howdy, Chris.
Hey, I can't wait.
And Vance can't wait to talk about meeples and wheat gathering in Eastern Europe in the 1920s. Hey, Vance.
Oh, sign me up.
Yeah, and I think Mike was dying to talk about man-to-man combat in the Civil War, right, Mike?
Yes.
Yeah.
I definitely want that level.
Yeah. Real time.
I mean, if I'm not out there, I've got hard tack, I've got to be loading the gun. I want the full effect.
So, you want the reenactment simulator.
No, that's too realistic. That's kind of scary.
Yeah, there's not, like, really much of a theme or an agenda tonight other than, hey, let's talk about some games, but... based on some of the chatter that we'd had going in the forums earlier today, it was sort of games in which you have absolutely no interest whatsoever. Kind of seemed to be where things were going. So Mike, what's a game in which you have absolutely no interest whatsoever?
Boy, that's going to be hard to tell. where to begin?
Well, because it's funny, like, Vance has... You know, up until a year ago, Vance never touched a Napoleonic anything he didn't hate. And he's like the first dude in line to sign up for the online Kriegspiels and Saturday Night Fights. He's like, you know, marching bayonet charges all over the place.
What are you trying to say?
That that you've evolved against all odds.
Evolved. That's
a bold statement.
I did mention that it was against all odds. Chris, aside from anything involving meeples, what's a game you're dying to not play?
Before I answer that question, this is for Vance. Come on.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, see, you broke it. You can't even make it work.
That's the sound of a counter being nicely clipped.
Oh, my God! Murderer!
I'm currently clipping Unconditional Surrender by GMT.
Oh, you mangler.
Live and on air.
Haven't you, mangler? Haven't you owned it for, like, 3 years?
Yes, but I'm finally going
to
get to
clip it. Yeah, Matt might actually put stickers on my Fields of Despair blocks, if that's the case.
Just shut up about Fields of Despair. I have that sticker. We're actually going to play that at Compass Con.
Sure you are.
We're going to a Compass Game Convention to play Fields of Despair.
To play a GMT block game that you've owned for 3 years.
I've actually played that, though.
And stickered the blocks.
I did sticker. I stickered the blocks for friggin' Origins, and I didn't have to do it.
You clip your finger off yet?
No, no. I put that one. That's one down. Man, that was the first one. I've got it like half. It's pretty good progress.
Let me just ask: before you circumcise your counters, do you sprinkle them with holy water?
If bourbon is holy water, he certainly
yes.
Is.
Well,
not whether or not he sprinkles himself with it. All right, so Mike, we've stalled long enough. What's a game you're dying to not ever have to play?
What's that one that Mirth likes? Agricola sounds like Pensacola.
Pensacola.
Let's go with that one.
Yeah, there actually is a Pensacola game. It's, you know, the
I have it. I yeah. Played it.
You lived it.
1781, is that it? Yeah.
Yeah. You've lived it.
Yeah. It's the only game I ever got to lay a corduroy road. So, I don't know why I remember that, but I do. Yeah, you have to build a corduroy road up to the fort you're trying to attack. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to have to explain the whole idea of a corduroy road, because I think...
Yeah, corduroy road means something completely different to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Canadian slang that is, Vance, but we try to keep this mostly PG-13.
Yeah.
So, Mike,
road is half washed out.
Yeah, what is a corduroy road?
Well, as I understand it, you take a bunch of logs and kind of just make a road out of them.
Okay.
Okay.
Conceptually, that does make sense.
I don't know if corduroy pants came from that or the other way around. I don't know.
We're probably all better off not knowing.
I'm Googling that right now.
PG-13, guys. PG-13. Vance, what's a game you're dying to not ever have to play?
Scythe.
The digital or the board game version?
Don't care.
Well, so...
Orgy gathering with Max.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Like, I totally get the, the fact that it's like a resource gathering sort of based game, and having talked with Zabak back when he was still around, when he'd actually played it a couple of times, and he said really the resource gathering isn't that heavy in the game. What's the bigger thing is that there's a couple of times where there's just some really awkward rules in there that don't seem to make any sense. Like, you can move across rivers with your mechs, but there are limitations on attacking across the rivers. Like, you can't shoot across the river, even though you could walk across the river. And so, you know, I may be misstating the rule slightly, whatever, but he said, you know, there's some really counterintuitive rules things in there that seem to be there for game balance, but conceptually don't seem to make a lot of sense, that you could find a better way to put the game balance in than to have rules that just make your players go, that's dumb.
But that's what I've read a lot, though, is that there isn't any game balance. There's one faction that's wildly overpowered.
Yeah.
And one that's wildly underpowered, and the other two are kind of meh.
Yeah, so I've never played the game, but I will say one of the really cool things about it... Oh, hold on. Brief pause. The Astros just took a 3-1 lead with a home run.
Nobody cares.
Somebody cares. That somebody happens to be recording this thing, so you guys all get to care. Mike cares because he's got a ticket to watch whoever it is that ends up, you know, beating the Nationals in Game 4 there in right. D.C. So
I don't care who beats us.
The cool thing that I think, you know, is nice about Scythe and the upcoming Iron Harvest game is part of where some of this discussion comes from, because today, as we are recording this, there was some discussion about the new trailer for the digital RTS that had shown up in our forums. It's not necessarily so much that the game itself is all that snazzy. It's that the setting is something that's so different than we've dealt with before. Now, I got it, Scythe's been out a couple of years, but that interwar Eastern European thing sort of combines a couple of things we don't see a ton of out there in the gaming world. We really spend a lot more of our time on Western Europe, sort of, you know, Berlin looking towards England instead of ever like Berlin looking towards Moscow in the middle there, other than World War II and a little bit of World War I. We don't ever touch the interwar years. We don't touch a ton of pre-World War I. Right, I mean, there's Pax Baltica. There's three or four games on sort of Sweden rampaging around the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. There's not a ton of games out there that cover that area that don't have the Germans and the Soviets in ascendancy. And so it's, you know, it mixes an old history world, a part of the world that we don't game that much, that is familiar but just different enough, and a time period we don't ever really touch. And that's not a bad combination.
That's part of what was disappointing to me was this. It sounded like a really cool idea. Now, if they'd done
Iron Harvest.
Iron Harvest. If they'd done that game on the board, I'd be more interested.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
if they'd done a straight 1920s mech war game as a board game,
yeah,
that would be much more interesting to me than what Scythe turned out to be.
But only if those mechs were like purple meeples. Only then would I play it.
Yeah, we know what you think.
Spray paint.
That would be a cool little. I'm not sure. That would be a cool little minis game. Like, you know, do some.
It would be
plastic minis and stuff like that.
Well, and there may be one forthcoming. But well. So here's two divergences off of that whole idea of that as a minis game. One. The world that is now the Dust Tactics game started out as like a comic book series 20 years ago that Fantasy Flight got the IP licensing briefly and had the Dust board game, which was actually a pretty cool game. The Dust board game takes place post-World War II because World War II kind of got extended relative to when it ended in the real world. So this alien technology allowed, you know, all sorts of different technological advances that extended World War II to where the Dust board game had some nifty little components to it. It was basically fixing all of the things you hated about Risk, right? There's variable production, but you had to actually manage production. There was unit differentiation. So, I mean, it wasn't something that hardcore grogs are necessarily going to go for, but it's something that a hardcore grog could sit down and play with a more casual board gamer and still scratch that strategy game itch. Like you guys said, it would be a really cool minis game. Dust grew out of that board game into Dust Tactics, which is a damn cool looking minis game. You know, they always have a huge booth at Origins every year. I'm sure most of you guys have seen those minis floating around the game conventions. The Dust Tactics minis look freaking awesome.
Do people actually play that though?
I've seen a bunch of games on tables at the game conventions, and that's the only place I've ever seen it. Now, the caveat there, of course, is I think the other three of us combined on this call don't play as many minis games as you do. So you're kind of the guy that would know.
True.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, yeah, I do play quite a bit of minis games. And, I mean, I've seen the models. It looks cool. And I understand the premise behind it, which also seems cool. But I've never actually seen anyone ever playing it.
Yeah. Now, the flip side, the other divergence off of the idea of Scythe as a minis game is back almost 15 years ago now, DreamPod 9 had the Gearkrieg series of games out, which was sort of mechanical mechs, you know, these convertible armored fighting vehicles that also had legs that could stand up, and they were convertible mechs in World War II. And again, damn cool minis. I mean, if you go look online at some of the photos out there for Gearkrieg stuff from the mid-2000s, there's some friggin' awesome sculpts and paint jobs that people did over the years with those things. And the lifespan on that game was maybe 5 years. You know, it fell apart. Partly, I think, goes back to, Mirth, what you were asking. Did anybody ever play it? Like, I never actually saw it on a table getting played. The rules weren't all that complex. The sculpts were awesome. Somehow it didn't catch on. So this idea of sort of mechanical walker mech type stuff in the early 20th century, this is the third, fourth go round at this point, and you know, maybe this is the IP that catches on. Who knows? Vance, I think you're right. I think it does look really cool. I just, you know, wonder what kind of game it's going to make eventually. So,
yeah.
Mike, what do you think? Does the world of Scythe interest you at all? Does the setting do anything for you?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife's got some friends that I think they wanted to play it one time, and I still haven't got a chance. I will if they eventually want to play it just to give it a shot, but I have no interest in that. I don't know why. I just don't.
Hey, you know, look, it's, we all have the stuff we prefer to play, and so, you know, it's, that's one of the things we've always tried to say about, you know, whenever folks are writing reviews, you know, yeah, this may not be your kind of game, but it's somebody's kind of game, so maybe you can help point it to the right person, even if it's not your favorite thing to do.
What's that, it's basically War of the Worlds minis game. I forget who does it. I mean, I had a buddy who was collecting it. The stuff looked great. It was just straight out of H.G. Wells. And then I think it flows into the First World War on top of that, or something close to that.
There are a couple of different minis companies that make the giant tripod War of the Worlds style walkers out there, because we've seen them at different game conventions and stuff, and they're not handmade things. But I don't know if somebody's got a dedicated minis IP towards that. I mean, obviously,
somebody does, public domain. There's a guy in my group who had it. He collected it. It's one of those things. Again, it looked really cool. We never played it.
Yeah.
And he had everything we needed to play it. I mean,
there's one just out recently that adds on to the Wings of Glory series, that's tripods and biplanes.
Okay.
That may be it. It's something like that. Anyway, it's a full rule set with the figs to go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, again, looks great, seems great in theory, never played it. Zero interest from like anyone in our group.
Yeah, so that's what I was about to ask. Is it necessarily that there's no interest at all, or there's just other things that keep bumping it down in the queue that, hey, this is the cool new thing, let's do that instead?
It's both. I mean, my group will play pretty much anything you put in front of it, so.
Except that.
I'm not really sure why we didn't play that. I mean, it looked really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. We got some guys who get pretty weird about playing stuff that's not purely historical, even though with the historical stuff we play, we do some wacky shit.
Like abandoning the peach orchard?
Yeah, for one. Yeah, that's a source. That's a sore point to this day.
So, Mike, what's something that you guys just don't ever seem to be able to get on the table with your group?
Does he actually have a group?
One group.
Yeah, well.
Well, you and your wife. And your dog.
My wife, that's my group. And we all know it's Gloomhaven in that group.
So everything except Gloomhaven gets pushed to the side, huh?
Pretty much, yeah.
Dude, you're in like the ASL headquarters of the country. There's nobody up there you could find a game with?
Okay, no. Much like minis, I'm not going down that road either. There'll be no ASL and no minis.
Why would you subject yourself to the ASL people?
Yeah, really.
Yeah. But it's not like there's no gamers in the DC area, dude. I mean, there's folks up there that play stuff.
We'll have to save this for the solo wargaming podcast. Then we're going to get Cyrano on.
Oh, and Bond's like that. He's lived in Houston and Phoenix, and he can't meet anybody to game.
Yeah, the Phoenix one's the one that kind of cracks me up. Like, you know, you're wondering where the wargamers are. You live in the town with ConSim World Expo.
I will say, I will touch on, because you guys have talked about this before, and I, early on in my wargaming days, even computer gaming days, I had the worst luck with multiplayer. And it was anytime I played multiplayer with somebody, there's two kinds of people I would encounter. There's one that wants to win the game no matter what, by any means necessary, and doing things like abandoning peach orchards and stuff like that.
But, hey, easy.
But no.
That was a sound decision.
But it's either that or they just – it's – I don't know. Here's the problem I have with my wife, again, my gaming.
Oh,
wife.
Here we go.
We used to play Civilization multiplayer.
Oh, yeah.
And the way that would work, it was great. We'd sit down and, of course, you know, she's on her laptop. I'm on my laptop. And we're playing. And after about 2 hours, I'm like, okay, I think I want to stop now. No, let's keep going.
Yeah.
It would turn into like a 6-hour thing. And I'm just like, oh, I don't want to play Civilization anymore.
That's a short Civ game, dude. Game.
No, I'm talking actually the computer game.
Oh, no, that's not Civilization. Play the board game.
Which version, Vance?
Mike, are you trying to say that there are jerks in this hobby? I am appalled. I am appalled to hear that.
I'm appalled and offended.
I think there probably are some. Not everybody, but there are some. That was my encounter, though, and it kind of drove me away from multiplayer.
You're going to have to join the Saturday Night Fights one of these nights.
Yeah, no, I was mulling over the whole Trafalgar thing. That looks very interesting.
Oh, jump in, man.
But that's another problem, and that's Tabletop Simulator. And it's I'm all messed up when I play that, because it's like I'm dropping pieces off the board. I don't know where anything goes. I can't control anything. It's like, I don't know.
Well, you just need to slow down and stop being a spaz.
That's not going to happen.
Remind me not to invite you to an actual game table.
With expensive bottles.
Okay, no. So let's truly encapsulate just what a spaz Mike can be at a game table. Mike managed to lose two counters from a shrink wrapped game. The game was still in the shrink. Mike lost two counters.
But the year before that, he lost a whole contingent of Roman governors.
Well, but you'd already punched those out, so you probably found them on your kitchen counter when you got home. I was. Maybe they defected to Carthage. Who knows?
Two Japanese infantry. I never found them either.
Yeah, I was most impressed by the fact that you managed to lose two Japanese infantry units out of a shrink wrap box. Like that. That one. That may take the cake for the most interesting game setup fiasco we've ever seen. So that was entertaining.
Oh, I can do better than that.
That wasn't a dare.
That sounds like a challenge.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a minute.
Challenge accepted.
Exactly.
We're gonna
hold my beer.
Block games. I'll show you
hold
what
my
I,
beer.
You're Canadian. That's beers, plural.
It's Mike. Hold my bourbon. Is what.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
So Vance, you mentioned Civilization, the board game. Which version?
The original, Avalon Hills.
So the 1980 one.
Yep.
I didn't know if you were going to go all Fantasy Flight on us there.
No. The original one. We've played that game so often that the cards are brown from finger stains.
I don't want to know how you made the cards brown.
To play with lots of people.
Yeah, I don't want to know how you made the cards brown.
Yeah, well, Cheetos.
The Fantasy Flight Civ game actually isn't a bad iteration of the tabletop game. The first expansion that came out for it, I really didn't enjoy. I know some people are like, oh, you have to use that expansion. It makes the game so much better. I didn't enjoy it that much, but, you know, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, I've never had a chance to play that. That's just a board game conversion of the computer game, right?
Essentially, yes. There's some of the math has been stripped out. And quite frankly, there's a couple of fairly elegant ways in which they manage, like the research system. Look, we're wargamers, so we're always going to be underwhelmed with whatever combat model they put in there. We're always going to think that's too simplistic. Overall, for what it is, it's a pretty good game. Now, let's be honest. Look, it's a Fantasy Flight game, right? There's 10,000 pieces strewn across a pool table-sized table that you need to play this thing on, just because Fantasy Flight can't help themselves.
Yeah.
But if you've got a good group that's multiplayer, that's there to have a good time and isn't, you know, being uber cutthroat, must win at all costs kind of guys like Mike was talking about a few minutes ago, it's a fun time. Look, one of the biggest problems you run into with the computer game is because of the way the AIs are scripted and because there's only so much code you can write, there are inherent limitations on what you can do with a diplomacy model when you're playing against six AI opponents. When you've got a couple of folks around the table that are willing to sort of wheel and deal and kind of, you know, overlay the diplomacy game on top of the Civ game that you're playing, it's a lot like Warrior Knights or Twilight Imperium or any of those other big box Ameritrash Fantasy Flight games. If you've got a good interactive group that's willing to play the meta game and not just what's on the table, it's a lot of fun. If you've got a couple of dudes that just sort of put on horse blinders and only want to focus on what's on the table right in front of them, it's a long game of Risk with better looking pieces.
That sounds like the guys that Mike plays with.
This is the second time you've taken a shot at Risk. What the hell's wrong with Risk?
Yeah, why? Who's stomping on Risk?
They got zombies in it now. It's great.
From my seat, I see four different Risk games in my stack.
I have several, and some of them are pretty good. I've got the 2210 AD that's pretty good. The Mythology one's not bad. The Lord of the Rings one's not bad.
The, I have two of just the regular Risk.
The two biggest problems with, the original Risk had. The two biggest problems the original Risk had were, one, there's no unit differentiation whatsoever. Everybody's just the same kind of block. And two, the logarithmic reinforcement production model. If you could fix those two things, you'd have a fun game. And the original Fantasy Flight Dust game fixed those two things. You had some unit differentiation, and you had a production model that made sense. And the 2210 AD version of Risk fixes a bunch of that. The Risk Europe that actually puts the mission cards in there does a decent job of fixing some of that. There's a lot you can do with Risk, but plain vanilla Risk is... that's an atrocious game. Don't try to apologize.
No!
For it.
I'll tell you, as a longtime gamer, what keeps me coming back to Risk is the solo play.
Dude, you are so full of crap.
I love the solo play options in Risk.
Right? You're sober and you're full of crap. I mean...
that's when I'm most full of crap.
Go pour yourself another shot. Get back to us.
I'm working on it.
So, yeah, that's why I'm dumping on Risk, because there's two significantly broken pieces to it. There are a variety of, you know, there are different variations of Risk that aren't bad games. So, have any of y'all ever played the Game of Thrones version of Risk at all?
No.
Vance, I think...
I'm an adult, so no.
Yeah. Vance, I think it was you mentioned playing the Legacy version one time.
No.
We were having a conversation one day at the convention where somebody had talked about playing the Legacy version of Risk. I thought it was
how many versions of Risk are out there?
Oh, it's got to be a dozen.
Oh, there's more than that. Easy. Not counting all the different variations on the original one. There's a Europe. It's Castle Risk, 2210 AD. There's the Mythology one, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones. There's three or four custom branded ones, like there's a Rick and Morty one. You know,
there's a My Little Pony Risk.
Yep.
So, and I'm not even on Board Game Geek looking this up. I'm just trying to go off the top of my head what's floating around out there. So,
I'm looking at Star Wars Risk.
Oh yeah, there is the Star Wars one.
And Star Wars Monopoly, which I really like.
Yeah.
Nobody likes Monopoly.
The get out of Death Star free card.
No, it's just making shit up.
There is a Star Wars Monopoly. It did exist.
I know. So.
And there probably is a get out of the Death Star free.
There is not a get out of the Death Star free card. I have it over downstairs. I've got the Star Wars Monopoly game. Like every other Monopoly game on the planet, it was a gift from somebody that knew that I liked games and didn't know jack about games. And they're like, oh, he likes games. He's like Star Wars, buying the Star Wars Monopoly game.
All right, here. This is a good segue. Worst game gift game you've ever received as a gift.
Star Wars Monopoly.
I was once given Trump the Board Game as a gift.
Really?
Yes, seriously. Like in 1988.
Like from somebody that hates you?
Well, family, so yes.
I think if we ever give Vance a counter clipper for Christmas, that'll be his number that'll one. What's your number one right now, Vance? Worst game gift ever.
I have never been given a game. Apparently. I've only ever bought my own.
Does everyone just hate you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they have no idea what games are, so they know not to buy them.
Yeah, I have to agree with that, too. It's like somebody, they're on danger. It's like buying clothes for me. Nobody's going to do that either.
Well, no, that's different. My wife buys all my clothes. I don't give a shit.
Oh, no, Lord, no.
Well, count yourselves lucky because you could get a copy of Trump the Board Game.
and now that Chris knows, you might.
it would break him trying to send it up here.
Oh, I'll find a way.
He's close enough he could drive across the border and then mail it.
Exactly.
Now, he can't get back.
They're not going to let me into Canada with that game in my car.
Exactly. I'll warn the border guards.
Yeah.
They're not going to let you back without it.
I'll stay in Canada. I like Canada.
So, Mike Vance never ended up with a game as a gift at all?
No.
Oh no! The first game I ever received was as a gift. It was the original Starfleet battle set.
Again,
which was actually really good. See, that was somebody who knew me. It was my oldest brother, and he knew I liked Star Trek, and that was a complete surprise to me. And it was all downhill from there, as they say.
Did you ever actually play that game?
Oh yeah, all the time.
Yeah, all through high school.
Chris,
I had it. I read the rules. I could not get any of the bashers I went to school with to play it.
Oh, we used to have big six-player matches going.
Chris,
it was too complicated for any of my idiot friends.
Yeah, you and I are the least nerdy guys on this podcast, and you're asking if these guys ever played Starfleet Battle seriously?
I'm the least nerdy. I don't
how are you getting that? What metric are you using to measure that?
I know.
Love of Starfleet Battles. In this case, you know, there's one of those great, you know, demotivational poster memes out there. That's the it's the record sheet for like one of the Birds of Prey class starships, and it's, you know, Starfleet Battles, and the subtitle is "We were afraid you were going to start having fun."
You know what was a nice balance between Starfleet Battles and something else? FASA had a set of Starship Combat rules, which
I'm looking at that right now. It's called Star Trek Starship Tactical Simulator.
I always wanted to play that. That went with the role playing game, right?
Yeah, it did. It was.
Yeah, we never played the role playing game.
It came with it. They did a nice set of color counters for it, which I still have.
Yeah.
it was a great set. I mean, it wasn't overly complicated. It was not Starfleet Battles.
Oh no, it was much easier to play than Starfleet Battles.
Yeah, but it was a fun little game.
Chris, honestly, when you said, you know what was a nice thing that was simpler than Starfleet Battles, I was waiting for you to say Microsoft Excel.
Harpoon, for example.
Yeah.
Yes. War in the Pacific.
The.
You think Starfleet Battles is bad? Haul out Federation and Empire. I have yet to play that game.
Oh, that's an awesome game.
Jeez. I think it is, but I look at it and I'm like, I need to agree to play that game.
Isn't Federation Empire kind of up there with Campaign for North Africa that, you know, it's sort of there and you kind of play it as a bit on a dare just to say you've done it, but nobody really does it long term. Like, that's not somebody's lifestyle game right there, is it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are rules for the Klingons on how to prepare gach.
If you don't have enough gach, you can't move your power.
Yeah, right. Your morale drops way off.
Yeah.
And, Bran, you thought we were nerdy before.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the audience is going to hate us at this point. We're only 30 minutes into this, and we've lost 2/3 of our audience, so we're down to 4.
You lost half the audience when you said it was on this podcast.
Yeah.
You lost the other half when you started hating on Risk.
I might have picked up some of the audience from that point. So, I'll tell you, it was much maligned as a beer and pretzels game. I actually didn't mind the Star Frontiers Nighthawks spaceship battle game. It was nowhere near as detailed as any of the Star Trek and subsequent spin-off type of games were. But as a Hex Encounter beer and pretzels type, you know, let's fly spaceships around and blow each other up, the old Star Frontiers Nighthawks game wasn't that bad. The biggest problem with it was, because it was branded as a part of Star Frontiers, it had all the role-playing tie-in stuff. If you strip the role-playing stuff out of the board game, you lose probably half the rule book. And you don't miss a thing, because it's still a perfectly good game without any of that crap in there. The contrast to that, the spaceship battle game that was grafted onto Battletech, I really did not enjoy at all. I thought that one was pretty crappy.
That was pretty crappy, actually.
Yeah. The
space combat game that came with Traveler wasn't so bad.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. I recently got that one on Humble Bundle. Had a cheapy sale on those old games like that, and I think that was included in there.
Was that the Traveler 4 bundle that they had in there?
No, this is before that. This was just like a bunch of random old games they stuck in a... we know Michael by this. Let's put it out there. And of course I did.
Interesting what you said, Brian, about the Battletech thing, because... I mean, Battletech, which was and is such a great, you know, casual war game, that space combat element just did not work.
It's so the further Battletech got away from mechs shooting at each other, the worse the stuff got. So, like, City Tech was a great expansion, adding the ground vehicles and the infantry and, like, all of the stuff involved in mech combat that wasn't just two mechs blowing each other up was a great expansion. Battle Troops is stuck in my head, but I don't think that was the actual name of the game. But the one that sort of takes you up to almost kind of a Hex Encounter version of Battletech, where each one of the markers on the map is a platoon, is a lance of mechs. That one wasn't too bad. But once you got into dropship combat or space, you know, the spaceship to spaceship kind of stuff, the further you got away from mechs shooting at each other, the worse it got. Aerotech as sort of close air support rules was fine. Aerotech as air-to-air combat rules, crap. I got it. You know, this is one guy's opinion, but, you know, it's our show. It's our website. We can have all the opinions we want. I started playing Battletech in the early 80s when it was still called Battle Droids. Right, I haven't played it as much as anybody else, because there's guys for whom that's their entire lifestyle. But I've played it a lot over the years for a long time, and enjoyed quite a bit of it for what it is. Like you said, you know, sort of a casual war game. The further they got away from, you know, mech to mech combat, the worse the games got.
Oh, Oh, I agree. It's just, it's funny because it's such a nice little game, and, you know, you'd think that they could, you know, the space combat or whatever would be a natural add-on, but it just did not work the same. It wasn't the same experience at all.
Yeah, I totally agree. And in the Mech Warrior role-playing game, like, if it was just simply a way to level up the mech pilots, that would be fine. But then they started grafting on all sorts of rules for these guys to be having adventures outside of the mech. So basically, you know, the adventures of the Grey Death Legion when they're not on the battlefield. And look, the books were a lot of fun, but as a rule set to, like, go out and do stuff, like, is that really what you want to spend your time doing, or do you want to just climb in a mech and go blow shit up?
Yeah, the role-playing stuff never did much for me. I mean, I wanted a little bit of role-playing, you know, like, you get out of your mech, you barter for equipment and stuff like that, but I never really looked at it as a role-playing game. I mean, it was kind of a miniatures combat game, a little bit of role-playing tacked onto it.
Yeah, and
well, that's how we played Car Wars, right?
Yeah, but...
You wanted to be able to get out and do stuff with your character and maybe level them up a little bit, but... It really wasn't a role-playing game.
No, and that Car Wars stuck true to its nature of just doing that. And
oh no, it got into bloated hell. They had
tanks
and helicopters and boats. And
yeah,
it just became nonsense.
But it, at its core, what you were really doing, you know, if you were playing in sort of a campaign game, you were leveling up your drivers. But it's not like your drivers were, you know, trying to found a new stronghold in the wilderness or something, the way your D&D characters do once they hit level 9 and you start expanding beyond just being a murder hobo, right? You know,
the East and West Midville maps pushed together then. We played gang warfare on, like, sectors of the city.
But did you play it as this big extended multi-year campaign game where you were... You know, you were trying to level up those dudes and progress as characters within the gang beyond just driving around and blowing shit up.
No. Probably
not so much.
Probably,
you know?
Not, no.
But the idea of sort of leveling up your driver, leveling up your mech pilot over a campaign of, you know, a half a dozen battles, like, that would make sense. Your guys sort of get better or they die. I mean, that's sort of what happens in battle.
Yeah, we did that loosely, right? We all kept track of our driver. It wasn't really a campaign put together, but every time we got together, everybody put their... If your driver survived the last one, you got to put them in your new car.
Yeah, totally. Level up. And it, you know, technically, that's sort of one of the key differentiators of a role-playing game versus just, you know, like the campaign mode in any other tabletop war game, is that your guys do get better over time, and that character progression is one of the hallmarks of the role-playing world. But you're not grafting on all of the other stuff where you're actually acting out the, you know, going to the bar and, you know, picking a fight and trying to get intel on where the bad guys are and all. You're just like,
No. We didn't,
put the counters on the map. Okay, get that pilot out again. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, you know, again, as your dude sort of leveled up through battles in Mech Warrior, that totally made sense. Or, you know, in Battletech, it totally made sense. But once Mech Warrior started putting on all the other stuff for, like, let's have all these adventures not in the mechs, you're sort of shrugging and going, why? Like, what's the... I'm sorry, I want to climb back in my Warhammer and shoot people, you know?
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, it really is, because, I mean, that's just the nature of Battletech. It's so much around the actual being in the mechs and having the fights. And honestly, that system was really cool and fun to do those fights, so why... You didn't really need a lot of role-playing on top of that. I mean, we always played it that... We were role players, so, you know, that whole leveling up process and adding gear, we could have just done it by the numbers, but we always had a little role playing element to it. But we didn't make it a role playing game. I mean, that fun was in having the battles.
Yeah, a good portion, like, I can understand why somebody would be interested in some role playing in the Battletech universe, as detailed as that can be, especially with all the novels and books. And look, there were maybe a half a dozen books out when the Mech Warrior role-playing game was released. There weren't that many books already in circulation as people started wanting to explore the universe more, and it's only gotten more detailed in the 30 years since, that it's a fascinating place to explore. it's just for me, and sounds like for you as a gamer, that wasn't it wasn't the best way to explore that world, you know, when you're wanting to hop in a mech and blow shit up.
Well, I appreciate the backstory they put into that universe. I mean, I was dug all that stuff. But do I really want to be like a bodyguard for Hans Davian? Is that how I want to experience Battletech?
No.
No. Yes, and yeah, nerd level achieved.
Yeah. You'd spend the whole time hitting on Katrina Steiner anyway, so.
Oh, yes, I would.
You want to talk about an immensely detailed and probably underutilized media license. Battletech is one of those worlds that's just dying for a movie series or a TV series of some sort with as much detail as they've got packed into those things.
You weren't satisfied with Robo-Jocks?
Yeah.
Robo-Jocks?
Can somebody reach through the computer and smack him in the head for me, please? But no, I mean, seriously, there's enough detail and enough intrigue and enough storyline in there to sustain several seasons worth of, you know, HBO-level, you know, TV series.
Oh, absolutely. The politics they built into that, I mean, geez, that's fucking, that would make Game of Thrones look simple.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, and that's before the clans came back.
Oh, God, yeah, let's stop before the clans show up, by the way.
Yeah, there's plenty of people that I think we've completely lost. Mike, were you never a Battletech player?
No, you guys are talking Greek right now. I don't know.
I never played Battletech.
We've out-nerded Mike, for God's sake.
You have out-nerded Mike. Starfleet Battles doesn't seem so bad now.
So
Kzinti carriers and drones don't seem so bad now.
Lore behind. The lore behind Battletech is quite expansive. Let's face it, there's more than a little bit of lore behind any Star Trek media licensed product out there. But as a game, man, Battletech is like 1,000 times easier to manage than Starfleet Battles. So you don't need an app.
Taught you how to play Starfleet Battles? It's not that difficult. It just takes forever to resolve damage.
No, this
forever being an understatement.
So there's 47 rolls every time, die rolls every time you get hit by something.
No, you make a deck of cards. That's what we did. Just pull a card.
Yeah. There's lots of ways around it.
Yeah, like not playing Starfleet Battle.
Yeah. So the rules themselves were so messed up that you had to house rule them to simplify them.
No, the rules themselves are very straightforward. The damage model was just a little arduous.
Slow the game down for no
reason. That's like saying Everest is kind of tall.
A little arduous.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, and I heard Everest is kind of tall. So. All right, so an off-the-wall game that you wouldn't expect people to think you really enjoyed. Mike, what's something a little off-the-wall that you played that you had a good time with that most wargamers would look at you and go, really? You had a good time with that one?
Actually, it's not even a war game. It's a game that we played with friends a couple of weeks ago, and it was, what was the name of it? It was, I think it was Code Talkers or Code Talk.
Code Names?
Code Names, maybe that was it. Where you have, like, the cards that are face up, and you have to guess, I guess, which cards your partner is trying to explain. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think you're describing Code Names. I haven't played it, but I think that's the one. So
it was fun.
I wasn't thinking just war games. You know, whatever. So you know,
I'm looking up now. Yeah, it's Code Names. That's it.
Vance,
put
him on the spot.
Geez, I don't know.
He wants to say Starfleet Battles, but he's
I want to say play with little lead Napoleonic figures and Tabletop Simulator.
To be fair, that's probably not a bad answer, given how far you've come over the last, 18 months or so.
Yeah, that's true. I never would have pictured me ever playing anything Napoleonic. And now I've played miniatures and hex encounter games. Actually, pike and musket level hex encounter games.
Oh, my God.
I have no interest in it at all.
We're going to put Vance down as We're going to put Vance down as the GM for the Labatt games at Origins next year.
Yeah, no.
Chris?
All right, I had to think about this. I recently played a game called Iron Cross, which is a skirmish-level World War II miniatures game, but it's pretty simple, and I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it for... I'm pretty finicky about skirmish, especially for World War II. So we played that. My group played that a few months ago. I ended up buying the rules. We're going to play it again, I think, at the end of this month. So, you know, for skirmish, it's fast play. It's a fun game. And I was actually surprised that I liked it as much as I did because I'm so pissy about World War II skirmish.
Now, yeah. Wait a minute. That's a game that you're surprised that you liked. But what's a game that you played that other people would be surprised that you played and liked?
Yeah, the idea that you liked a World War II skirmish game doesn't seem really beyond the pale.
I don't know. It's not like I'm with the
Crickle
lately.
It's like, if you told us you played, you know, Risk Zombies and you liked it, we'd all be shocked.
Actually, another one I just thought of was Root.
Oh, God, don't even get...
You should play Root.
No, I'm not going to play Root.
Yeah, it's a freaking coin game.
I don't even like the coin
game. As you say, you didn't talk him into it with that.
No, yeah, nice. Good
I don't like the coin games either, but this one works really well.
If it has cards in it,
don't tell me that. I don't know. I played, it's been a while, but I played like one of those like dungeon crawl board games. Buddy of mine. That was all right, right? I don't
know. One of the D&D board games?
No, it was like Clank or something like that. Clank's a game, right?
Yes.
I played that and didn't hate it.
And didn't hate it.
Sorry. I played Clank and I didn't hate it, all right? There you go.
I'll take it.
Confession time.
Yes, very much so.
If that's the best we're going to get out of you, then, you know,
I said I played Iron Cross and I liked it. That was enough for Mike. Mike, I played Clank, all right?
What about you, Brant? You play, like, everything.
Oh, God. Yeah. Tell us what meeple-based game you like.
It's not like it's a secret that I enjoy a variety of the meeple games, and one of the nice things about them is because they fit within a lunch hour, the game group that I meet up with once a week, we actually met twice this week, the group that I get together with, we can fit a Carcassonne or a Kingdom Builder or a Century Age of Golems or whatever into, you know, a one-hour lunch break somewhere, and so those are nice that we can fit those in there pretty easily.
But do those actually scratch your gaming itch, or is it just a reason to get together and chat?
Honestly, it's a little bit of both. There's a little more strategic depth to them than you will expect. The biggest challenge there is that for wargaming stuff, like, you're not going to be able to fit a whole lot of wargame stuff into a one-hour window, right? You can get a tank-on-tank game in an hour, but not much more than that. So, you know, given that those lunch windows are really the best time that I've got for any kind of gaming, that's probably the best I'm going to get for the group that I've got available. And this is something... I don't know that we've talked about it on some of the podcasts before. We've had the conversations online in a few different places. It's come up in the Wargamers group on Facebook once or twice. Kind of the gold standard for wargaming communities out there is the gang up in Columbus at CABS, where, you know, every other Friday night you can get together and get, you know, 4 or 5 hour wargame in. Plus they've got several gatherings throughout the year. And a lot of those guys meet folks that end up gaming together during the week. You know, again, Gary Mengel, friend of the Dragoons, you know, he's in two different weekly OCS games. The ASL dudes up in DC that get together once or twice a week, you know, throughout the course of the year. It's not always the same guys every week, but it's the same group that guys will rotate in and out of. Down here in the Triangle area.
DC area?
Huh?
Isn't Mike near the DC area?
They got ASL groups in DC.
Yeah, who knew? Down here in the Raleigh area, we've probably got, you know, just talking to Scott over at the store, we've easily got between 150 and 200 legit wargamers here in the area. The problem is we've got 89 different game groups spread throughout the area that we can't get organized and coalesced enough around one group that we can, or you know, two or three groups that we can reliably get a regular game going together somewhere, that you don't have to feel like you have to make it every week or the whole group's going to fall apart. And so those lunch game groups are the best I'm going to get. And I don't mind sitting down and playing some of those simpler games, because they do still sort of make you think and make you work your way through the problem as you're playing. They're not the true war games that I would rather be playing. But when it's the best you're going to get, you kind of go with it. So, you know.
But are they even good games?
By and large, yes, quite frankly.
Snotty sounding, but to me, they're not even good games. Like, they don't. Well, that's just me, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you may have ended up playing some bad ones. I'm not going to deny that there's some crap ones out there. There's a couple of them out there that I'm not, that I don't enjoy. Somehow I got roped into a couple of, more than once I've gotten roped into playing Colosseum. That game sucks. It is crap. You're trying to put on the biggest spectacle in the Roman Colosseum by, you know, there's different tiles for the stories you're trying to perform. There's different resources you have to gather to perform them. And it is as bad as I'm making it sound, because there's no way to make it sound good. It is a crap game.
You know when
game.
That's cool? When you do it with miniatures. I have a 3-foot by 3-foot stadium, and we play it with miniatures, and it's awesome.
The game Colosseum?
No, it's Habit Hot Habit.
There you go.
No, it's a World War II ship game. It's nothing
like Colosseum. Oh, stop it.
So you want to play? You want to play a World War II game at your lunch hours? Pick up an old copy of Avalon Hill's Naval War.
Yeah, there you go.
War at Sea.
No, Naval War.
Oh.
Or Hasbro's Battleship. It works too, and it's got miniatures.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God! Mike delivers the death blow.
I just want to say, this is why I love Board Game Geek, or maybe that's not the right word. I had to Google, because Mirth said it, or Chris said it, it's meeple-based games. And of course, I Googled that, and Board Game Geek, God bless them, they have the best meeple games geek list.
Oh my God. I do not want to see that ever.
just to drive Chris nuts, what's number one?
Number one is Carcassonne.
Carcassonne.
Oh my God.
Is it
hey, if that's
the best one.
Is it the original Carcassonne?
I don't know.
Okay. Because the original one.
I'm going to bring this up because this is a game that I like that people might not necessarily think that I would like. And I hate to plug the designer because it's not my favorite designer. But Cold War Naval Battles by DBG.
Yeah, I've got that. That's fun.
It's a fun game.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of nuance to it. It's a pure card game, which I hate, but I actually like that game. And not only did I buy the game, when he did it, I backed it. My name's on the box, for Christ's sakes.
So is mine, yeah.
Yeah, and then I got the expansion on top of that.
Yeah, I got both expansions. It's a great little game.
Is it a two-player game, or does it go multiplayer?
Game, and I hate card games.
It's a multiplayer game. It's actually a take on Avalon Hill's Naval War, which was a very simple card game. This is much more involved, but it's still, you can play a whole game in a lunch hour.
All right, one of y'all send me a copy.
Is it me?
By the way, the cards look great.
Yeah.
I will give it, the cards look great. If you're into the modern stuff, it's a great game.
Yeah.
And there's a surprising amount of strategy behind it. Like, you have to think about what you're doing.
Well, it's hand management and
yeah, that's all. Yeah, and I hate those games, but I really
you hate card games. I don't believe
it. I do. I completely do hate card games.
This now you've answered Brant's question correctly. I can't believe you play that.
It only took us 20 minutes to get there. Well, look, one of y'all send me a copy of Cold War Naval Battles, and I'll let you know what I think.
Well, there used to be.
Probably the only time I'm going to plug a DBG game. I'm not knocking him, but
there used to be. He used to have. When he originally released it before he did it for DBG, and you could actually get the all the download file.
Yes.
And I made an entire copy from the download files first.
Wow.
And we played that for a while, and then when he published this one, I immediately got into it.
I have to say, the quality of what got the published version, the cards are very nice. I mean, I've been very...
Oh, yeah, the ship art, the ship pictures are great.
They are, they're great, yeah.
The rules are very more streamlined than his old version.
And the one thing I will say, like, as far as the ship, I mean, there's not much to the numbers and all that, but it accurately for the simplistic game that it is, I thought that the values accurately represented the ship types.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And if you add in the extra rules where you could actually have layered anti-aircraft defenses, it works really well.
Stuff like that. There's a bunch of extra stuff that you can do with it. There's one of my buddies I've subjected. See, the thing is, I'm a huge naval nut, and I subject my buddy to it. He doesn't know any, so I just he's sitting there kind of like thumbing around. I'm like, boom, boom, this.
See, that's the other kind of multiplayer there is. That's that guy. I'm not going to tell you the rules. Yes, sit down. Yes. Boom, boom, boom.
There's the asshole and there's the pest.
Well, you learn by learning, right?
Here, you
learn
by playing. General Custer, I'm going to be the best there. It's like, go for it. Try to survive. Yeah, I get it.
Let's just say my buddy Dave did not like modern naval battles nearly as much as I did.
And now he plays solo games exclusively.
Yes.
Part of that is your buddy Dave probably doesn't like you. Your buddy Dave just doesn't like you nearly as much as you do.
Well, he and I have been gaming together for close to 20 years. So
it's the best you're going to get.
Somebody puts up with me.
We managed to you know, wrangle a full hour out of what kind of games did you not like, and what kind of things did people not expect you to play?
Are there games we haven't shit on tonight?
How much Risk sucks, and why BattleTech hasn't turned into Game of Thrones on HBO yet? So, all in all, not a bad hour.
Telling you about how much I hate Twilight Struggle.
Oh.
Save that for another podcast.
So here's how we unify your hate of Twilight Struggle and Mike's love of Star Trek. Was the year we did the Twilight Struggle tournament at Origins, one of the participants was one of the girls who was there cosplaying in the Star Trek uniform. So,
well, I might like Twilight Struggle a lot more under those circumstances.
No, we need the ballerinas.
You know, Vance, you go out and recruit them for the tournament, and we'll put them in there.
That's like, we should have another conversation of, like, Origins after hours.
No, no, we shouldn't, because somebody's going to end up in jail if that happens. So let's try not to do that. Just invite your friends to come hang out after hours at Origins. To do that, Chris, you would actually have to reappear at Origins. So, yeah, let's not. And let's all stay. Let's all use our bail money for games instead of bail.
Fran, I really appreciate you sharing how much you hate Risk.
It's fixable.
House rules.
I love house rules.
House rules is house rules.
We added nukes and paratrooper rules, man.
There you go. I would play with nukes. That's so awesome.
So basically you were playing Supremacy.
Yeah, the precursor to it, yeah.
So here's the thing with Risk, like where it's fixable, it's not stuff you house ruled, it's just other versions of Risk. Go get Castle Risk, go get 2210, go get the Mythology one. Go get one of the other Risks and you're fine. Just vanilla Risk is the one that sucks.
The important part is look for the solo play versions of Risk.
You know, somebody's going to think that I just put like a 1 hour laugh track underneath this podcast and just let it go. All right, Mike, thanks for sharing your nerdiness around Starfleet battles. Vance, thanks for polishing up your Napoleonic bayonets for the charge. Chris, thanks for, you know, not falling down drunk. And audience, thanks.
It was a challenge, I'll tell you.
Audience, thanks for, well, what, did you just start on the floor? Because you can't really fall off the floor. Audience, thanks for sticking with us for an hour.
Now that he plays a card game, I'm going to go start drinking. My whole universe is turned upside down.
I freaked some people out tonight, really.
To the audience, I apologize for how quickly this all went off the rails and the fact that we never got it back.
First 30 seconds.
Yeah.
This is why he won't have the three of us back on for 2 years now.
Well,
let me actually listen to this one.
So Vance wasn't here the last time we had both Chris and Mike on one. We had Gary as well, but after we stopped the recording, they spent another 45 minutes on Skype, spent probably $500 between the three of them on GMT and Cool Mini or Not and whatever other board.
Bad. I bought a lot of games that night.
I still got to open some of those.
I know.
It's been 4 years, guys.
Hey, can I plug GMT's Red Storm, which I have coming? I'm really excited about it.
You couldn't have led with that an hour ago? I mean, really, we've been on here for an hour, and now you want to bring it up?
I just thought of it.
It didn't really fit in with games you hate.
I know. I don't hate. I'm really, actually really excited about this game.
He doesn't know if it hates it or not. It hadn't even shown up yet.
I know, but
I hate him for getting it, so...
I got it for cheap, too.
Yeah, you got it for cheap, you bugger.
Yeah, he was one of those early adopters, wasn't he? Yeah.
Well, no, what Vance really hates...
I feel like I got it cheap.
I didn't pay $500. I just found it for cheap.
What Vance really hates is that Chris paid less for the game than Vance would pay in shipping.
Yeah, pretty much.
There is that.
That's the part that Vance hates, so...
Oh, and it's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
I know, jeez.
Americans pulling out of the multinational postal shippers agreement or whatever the frick.
Don't you worry. We're working on that, by the way.
So, Vance, that may not be as bad as you think. It's the Universal Postal Union, and what it will do is with us pulling out of that whole thing, it... Rather than have the union setting a lot of the shipping rates, it's going to allow us to cut bilateral deals for a lot of those shipping rates. So it's possible that we could end up cutting cheaper shipping to Canada, but it would be a direct U.S. to Canada deal as opposed to having to negotiate it with the UPU.
So far, Trump has done nothing good for U.S. Canada relations or economics.
So I'm not
taking care of that problem.
You want to start that conversation now at the end of the podcast?
Yeah, I'm not going into all the political ramifications of it all. I'm simply telling you that not being in the union gives people the latitude to negotiate the bilateral deals, whether or not they bother to negotiate a good one.
You know why he's doing it? He's trying to screw China, which is fine by me, but there's got to be an easier way than just blowing the whole thing up. Can't he just...
Yeah, well, whatever. Stop dumping your lumber on us.
Stop
selling your houses with our lumber.
We still ship all meeple-based games at a flat rate, so I don't want to hear it.
You know, Vance, you could...
We're talking about games I don't want to play, by the way. Those Order of Battle games are top of my list of games I don't...
You know, Vance, you could just drive across the border more often and pick them up.
Yes, there's that. I'm not that close to the border.
I got that, but, you know, there is CompassCon coming up. You could make a dedicated trek to come on down.
I don't know anybody's going to be there.
Huh?
Excuse me.
You can pick up a copy of Combat and drive it down.
I don't know anybody I like that's going to be there.
Well, that's not true. Gary.
Right, that's fair.
Vance, that is not true. Gary is going to be there.
Is he?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, we like Gary.
See?
I'm just making sure he never goes again, but...
Well, I'm waiting for ACD Con.
Yeah, we're getting there.
ACD Con? What's that?
You know?
It is an after hours.
It's all after hours.
All right. At this point, we're going to spare the audience any further torture and say goodnight. And then if we want to stay
on the
line
and listening. Keep it going.
Make fun of Vance or Chris or whoever else, we can do that.
We lost Trail Runner when you started shitting on ASL. Oh, wait, I was shitting on ASL.
Yeah. Good night, audience, and we'll let you know who survives the rest of this call.